In this podcast, we sit down with Jeffrey Asarifi, a humble and down-to-earth guy with a serious respect for money. For Jeffrey, it's not about the actual dollars, but it's about dreaming big and making your money work towards those dreams. He tells us about what a person needs to know about taxes, how we should look at cryptocurrency, and answers the question of whether or not weed stocks are really that dope. Most importantly, listen to what Jeffrey says is critical in shaping your relationship with money. Here's a hint. It's about knowing yourself, knowing your purpose, and knowing how to be grateful to those who came before you. Listen up for some serious money advice. What's your backstory? How did you come into discovering finance?
It's interesting because I don't remember me being so analytical when it comes to finance and like investments and all that other stuff, but I think it became very important to me once I got a partner. I decided, okay, like, how are we going to plan out our life? How are we going to accomplish our goals? And I found finance to be a very big part of that foundation of reaching our goals. So
are you saying you met someone, fell in love?
Fell in love, yeah.
And was like, I want to start building a future, and what does that look like?
And I'm going to be responsible for someone else's daughter, so I can't be a bum.
Yeah, wow.
So I want to make sure, like, I'm structurally sound from a financial perspective. In my culture, a man is supposed to be able to provide, and like, especially financially.
And that was important to you?
That was very, very important to me. I've just grown up with my dad working a lot. I found that, like, you know, he's always made sure that we were well taken care of. So I just wanted to carry that foundation going forward. Like, I need to make sure that I have all my ducks in a row when it comes to that stuff, so that in case of emergency that I'm able to, like, you know, withstand any types of obstacles. But we know life never goes the way we plan. So
never.
That's kind of why I started to get into finance a little bit better and more.
Okay, so how did you start out? What did you start out learning? Because now you're going, okay, I need to build a life.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you start learning about money?
Budgeting. Budgeting became the first, like, I guess, the first task that I attacked in terms of where's my money going, how much am I making, how much can I save in a year, how much do I need to, you know, get married, or how much do I need to invest so I can retire? Because I already knew I didn't want to work the rest of my life.
Yep.
I knew that the government didn't provide enough for us to retire. Also, I knew that, you know, if I want to establish something that I've never had before, I might need to do things I've never done before. So budgeting was something I never did before, so I started to implement that. And with my partner, we decided to, like, look at each other's money and see, like, what are you doing right and what am I doing right and what are you doing wrong and what am I doing wrong and what can we do to correct it so that we can, like, meet our goals.
And what were some of the things that you guys highlighted that you knew off the bat that you were doing right? And what were some of the things you were like, we are doing this so wrong?
Well, I think what we were doing right was definitely saving. Like, we always paid ourselves first. Like,
okay.
Individually, we just always saved.
That's what percentage? Something. Was there a percentage? Or just
there wasn't a percentage.
You just always saved. You
I always saved something.
Away.
I always saved something. And I never allowed myself to... And another thing was credit. Credit was very important. And we didn't check each other's credit, but we knew that we had good credit individually. Like, we already had, like, a good understanding. And we found that, like, you know, we always never missed a payment, always paid ourselves first. We tried to get a joint account so we could save towards a goal. And that was all. Those are all the foundational basic stuff we did. We didn't talk about investments at all.
No, that's, you know, just get the basics right.
Get the basics right before you start thinking about putting money towards an investment of a mutual fund or like a stock or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So fundamentals are get your budget.
Yeah.
Look at what you're spending. Look at what you're making.
Yeah.
Put a little bit of money. It didn't matter how much.
Didn't matter how much.
Small every week or every paycheck.
Yeah.
And just do those three habits right.
Habits, exactly, right? Build habits. And we did that for about a year, I believe. And we're just building habits and finding out who's really, like, who budgets properly and actually, like, hits their goals and who doesn't and why, right? And, like, birthdays, Christmas, events, vacations, stuff like that always kind of, like, individually got us off track at times, but not enough to like derail us. Like it was just, we were able still to catch ourselves and put us back on track.
How important was it to have a buddy, to have a partner, to have somebody else who you're accountable to, but that is also accountable to you? How important do you think that was in your success?
For me, I believe it was probably one of the most single important things that had to happen, because if I only had to be accountable for myself, then there's times where I'll just like shrug shoulders and keep it moving, kind of like if I, let's say I went out and I splurged on something, and no one's going to be like, Jeff, like you said we were going to do this, and now that you splurged, now we might not reach our goal. So it's like that partner kind of put things in place. As a male, I feel like partnership and being, you can do it on your own, but when you have a partner, it just makes things accelerate faster.
Yeah.
Like your maturity, your growth as an individual just becomes more important, that you do what you say and you say what you do type of thing. That's kind of how it went.
One of the things I think that is very interesting about the way that you plan your finances, and one thing that we've talked about, is you don't plan by the dollar, you plan by the goal. So you say, this is my goal,
mm-hmm.
and then you calculate how many dollars it takes
to reach
that goal,
mm-hmm.
and then you divide it by the time that you want to take that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, because I think we've been taught, well, you save 10%, but that means nothing, right? And
nope.
It's a lot harder when someone's saying, we'll save it, but I don't know why I'm doing it. So I'm like, no, this instant gratification works better.
Yep.
So talk to me about how does that work, the actual goal setting for you?
So the way I structured it is, like, I do the 3-account system. So, and then they work out into goals. So, like, you have your emergency fund, which are for stuff that are impulsive, that come up immediately, that need money. And then there's the short-term goal, which is 3 to 5 years. Like, usually it's a car, or it's, like, I don't know, something that is, I find, not too expensive, but expensive enough that you need to save a little short period of time. And then long-term goals are your retirement and any type of, like, you know, house or anything like that. I found that people, even myself in the beginning, was just like, I'm just going to save $200 and that should be good. But what is $200? Does that mean like I am able to retire early? Am I retiring late? Am I even retiring at all?
Mm-hmm.
So I found that like I needed to know exactly what my trajectory was. And I kind of built something called like an FNA, financial needs analysis. And that alone is what I use to track my progression. Am I reaching my goals on a quarterly basis, or am I reaching my goals on an annually basis? And I find that no one ever does that and try to like keep yourself accountable. Like, it's really, really hard to sit down and say like, I want to retire early if you don't start early. Like,
yeah.
You can't do it. Like, we have all the examples in the world, especially with the internet and everything, with the resources that lets us know, like, are we going to meet our goal or not? But we don't use it to our advantage. And that's what I've been trying to teach people through CFH, is that, like, you're supposed to, like, I know I'm going to reach my goal. I'm very confident I'm going to reach my goal. And a lot of, in terms of, like, retirement, I feel like I'm going to be very comfortable, because I'm so detail-oriented when it comes to, I want to retire at 55. I know how much I'm going to get, what I qualify for, what I don't qualify for. And living in this country, you need to know those things. Like, the tax implications. Like, if you don't know the tax system, even if you're not in, you don't like math, you don't like numbers, knowing how taxes work is something that I feel like is like, it's like learning English. Like, you need to know these things. It should be like implemented in schools, like very, very early on. Like, how does taxes work in this country? The more you make, the more they take off. Well, okay, that's fine. What can I do to lower my taxes? Open up a business, right? These are things that they don't teach us. We have to go out and find out later on in life and realize, like, yeah, going to school, getting a diploma, getting a degree, working for someone else is nice, but you're not going to be able to become wealthy. And that's kind of what was a really deciding factor for me.
So when you're saying find out, like, understand money, right, is the
yeah.
first thing, is knowledge is power.
Yep.
So when you say understand your taxes and what that implies,
mm-hmm.
how do I find out about that? How do I know these things?
So
who do I go to?
I had a resource who was very patient with me when it came to my accounting. My accountant was very patient with me. and explain to me, like, Jeff, if you make this, this is how much your bracket you're in, and this is how much you lose based on, you know, your taxes. So this is how you can lower your taxes. And having someone teach me a little bit was kind of the big deciding factor. And then from there, I went online and I started looking up salaries based on the province you live in and what gets deducted and what's tax deductible and what's not. Then you can kind of figure out how best to manage your finances from an income perspective. If you get married and you can do, like, you know, RSP type of moving, if one partner makes more than another, then you can move the money to the one that makes a lower amount. Mm-hmm. And that type of strategy over a long period of time is how you generate wealth, because you need to be able to take advantage of the rules that are implemented here. Like, if you don't know the rules, you're not going to win the game. How it works.
Yeah. I really like that concept, though. Again, like, you brought it up a second time, where it's like collaboration and partnership, right? And understanding how to move that money between that.
It's like a mastermind. Literally a mastermind. Your partner, or even, like I said, even if you do it on your own, it just knowing how much room you have in terms of, like, taxes, RSP contribution, TFSA. Like, if I ask a random person, what's your RSP contribution room? They'll probably look at me like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
And that scares me. That really, really scares me. Like, you need to know that. Like, I think Canada in general has, like, a couple $1 trillion worth of contribution room.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, people could be lowering their taxes, getting money back,
but
they're not. And then they're realizing, oh my God, I don't have enough money. Well, the government's giving you avenues to do that, and you're not using them properly.
Right. But there's a huge educational piece missing about that, too.
Oh, yeah, because people are using RSPs like savings accounts when that's not what it even stands for. Like, it's a registered retirement savings plan.
Okay.
Like, if you even know that acronym alone, that helps you get even, like, a little bit ahead, like, just knowing what it stands for. People knowing, like, okay, so if you're an employee, you want to take advantage of your RSPs. If you're a small business, you want to take advantage of your TFSAs.
Yes.
And just that simple rule alone can save you thousands of dollars over time. If you start at 50, you're not going to get as much as if you started when you're 25. That 25 years of saving and using the system for your benefit is going to help not just you, but your generation after.
It's like a marathon, though, right?
Oh,
it's like
100%.
If you start now, you're not going to see the results of it now. You're investing in, hopefully, like 10 years down the line, that's when I'm going to start reaping some of the benefit.
Yeah.
So we were saying education. So what if you were to tell people concisely what the benefit of having an RSP and how to best start utilizing that today, what would your tip be?
So first off, I wouldn't, I have a thing with the banks. The banks don't educate enough, right? So the average person has an RSP account and they'll probably make 0.05%.
Yeah.
We know the rule of 72 means that will never double in your lifetime.
Yeah.
So just having a simple conversation with a financial advisor that's most likely, even if they're in the bank, at least make them accountable. Like, every quarter when you get your statement, sit down with them and be like, why am I only getting 2%? Why can't I get more? Right?
Yep.
Minimum 6. Minimum. I think over the lifetime of, like, you know, mutual funds, I'm talking over, like, since 1934, if you look at the big picture, mutual funds have done at least 7%. So if you can't get 7% over a long period of time, you're not doing well.
Something's wrong.
Something very, very wrong.
Yeah.
And you need to hold them accountable. And people need to understand RSPs are not savings accounts. When you put money in, you get a credit.
Yes.
The minute you take the money back out, you lose the credit. You pay it back.
Yeah.
So people feel like, oh, you know, RSPs are not bad. No, RSPs are great if you know how to use the vehicle. It's like getting into a Ferrari and saying, I'm going to drive in like a school zone. Like, that, they don't work.
Yeah.
You have all this speed in the wrong zone. I don't even know if that metaphor works. But
No, it's great.
It's just doesn't work properly. Like, use the tool for what it's used for. Like, if you're going to hammer a nail, you need a hammer. You don't use, like, a screwdriver. So, like, just having that system in place and, like, being accountable, tracking it, holding the statements, asking questions. Like, there's never a dumb question when it comes to finance. Just ask.
Yeah.
And once you know, then you'll never ask again because you know.
You know.
So if I had to give advice about RSPs, I'd say start saving early so that you can retire one day. Like, the system's not built for our generation to work for one company and get a pension and be able to be paid out and live a good life. Like, the three-legged stool, where essentially you have CPP, old age security. You have your own savings from your RRSP. And if you're lucky enough to work for a company that gives you some type of pension, that's what's going to make you sit down properly. Without one of those legs, you're going to collapse. So those are like, that's like my main thing that I tell people, like three-legged stool. Have all three. And if you don't, then you need two of one, which is the CPP and the old age security, because you won't get that until you retire at 65, maybe 67.
Yeah.
So if you retire early, you're already at a disadvantage.
Total. On that too, I think the one question people don't know to ask is how much they're actually paying in fees. Because no bank will actually tell you what they're paying in fees. Even asking your financial advisor, like, what are you collecting in fees, and actually doing the math.
And seeing.
Seeing how much money you're actually going to take home on your investment, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's really important.
Is there ever such a thing as good debt?
Yes. And that actually came to me very recently.
Okay.
And that's because I came around people because of the way people use debt. Like back to the car. If you buy it, if you get... You need a car to make money, yes. And you need a car to get around. But the type of car you get really determines whether it's a good debt or a bad debt. If you're an Uber driver, that's good debt because it generates you income, right? But if I don't, let's say I commute to work and like I don't really drive far, maybe I can have an SUV. But if I buy an SUV and my commute's an hour long, why do I have an SUV? You get what I'm trying to say? Like, we're trying to have that discussion and figure out what makes sense. But I find right now credit, you can get credit pretty easily in this country, right?
Yep.
So when you get credit, what do you do with it is what's going to determine whether it's good or bad. Because if I take credit and I go throw it into a business, and this business has some potential, has an opportunity to generate me income, then that's good debt. Because I know, let's say a house is good debt. Yes, you're in mortgage, you have debt, but like that appreciates. If I take debt and I put it into something that is supposed to grow, that I've done research, not too risky, but has some type of like, you know, plan and business model, that's good debt. Like, I'll go take a line of credit, put it in this business, I'll take 20 grand, put it in this business, and let's say 10 years from now, that 20 grand might be 100 or 200 grand.
Yep.
That's good debt. That's perfect debt. And if you get it at a low interest, that's even better. Right?
And I will add the stipulation, though. It is a risk. It's like playing the stock market because there's no guarantee you'll get that money back. Yeah. You might lose it, but that's the risk you take on the hope that it will pay you back. But the actual act of it is what you're saying is the act of it is an investment. So therefore, it's good debt.
Because you're not taking it and buying clothes. You're not taking it and splurging on something that jewelry or like stuff that at the end of the day won't appreciate fast enough for you to take the money back to like pay off this loan. Because it's not your money.
Yeah.
You've taken the money and you put it into some type of entity, like a business or something. You put it into something. Whatever you put it into determines whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. I think it's like learning, right? If you put it into it and you're getting something valuable learning-wise back, something to help you grow or enrich or reach for your goal, that to me is an investment. I want to talk about cryptocurrency and weed stocks.
Nice.
Hot, new, fandangled investment.
It's funny, I was just looking at that today. It's down $500 in 1 hour.
It's amazing.
That's scary.
It's terrifying, uncharted, brand new territory.
Yeah.
So firstly, tell us a bit about cryptocurrency and tell us a bit about weed stocks and why this is important.
So right now, because it's so uncharted and not regulated at all, there's so much volatility. Volatility is good if you know how to use it properly. But a lot of people don't know how to use it properly. Even me, myself, I've had exposure to volatility that was like, wow, like, damn, this. It's like you absorb it, and then you realize what happened, and then you learn from it. So, for me, I'll talk about crypto. Crypto was introduced to me last year, July. My friend told me, invest in Ether. Ether is going to make a lot of money. I was like, what the hell is Ether? What is crypto? So I did some homework and I started researching and I'm like, wow, okay. When I got Ether, it was about $250. And this thing went from $200 to about $1,000 by December. And I was like, shit, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
My only issue with crypto is eventually the banks are going to find a way to, like, either one, track and tax when you do make money off of it. And two, they might not even allow it at all. So then your money might be locked away in the market and you can't have access to it. I think weed is the best thing right now to invest in because the growth is not even really actually matured yet. Like, the real maturity is probably like 2021. When there's actual sales, there's some type of trend, the market stabilizes a little bit, people actually know what the government's gonna do in terms of stores and everything like that. So for me, weed is like beer. Like, if I was around when beer was first introduced to the market, maybe I'd be a millionaire right now. I would have invested in Budweiser and Coors and stuff like that. So I attribute it the same way. Like, they go hand in hand. Like, I think weed is a commodity similar to, like, and we were talking about it before. Like, we believe that weed companies eventually are going to be bought out by pharmaceutical companies.
100%.
And pharmaceutical companies have a bottomless pit of money. So meaning these stocks can increase to $70. And that's an average pharmaceutical stock price.
Yep.
Knowing that, if you look at the ticker, it's trading at like $9 right now.
Yeah.
You plant that seed right now and it ends up at $73. Guess what you just did?
Yeah.
You just generated wealth.
Yep.
And not only that, you can have that there and you can pass it on. You don't necessarily have to keep it.
Yeah.
That's the difference. You want assets you can pass.
Yeah.
You can't pass a job.
Yeah.
You can pass investments. You can make other people beneficiaries. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if you make them beneficiaries, I'm pretty sure there's some probates that you can pass in terms of government like stuff that it doesn't allow them to tax it because it's just literally transfer of wealth.
Yep.
That's what I've been studying a lot, building trusts. I've been looking into building a trust with my name on it. Like, that is something that gives that me good juice.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good. Like, if I can build a trust that has a significant amount of money and it's passed on without any of the government interference, I love that. That's what I want. For me, I've been steadily investing like $100 every paycheck into weed just because I know even a small amount can turn into something very big in weed market because it's volatile, but volatile in a good way.
Yep.
Because I know this is a commodity. Crypto is not a commodity yet. We don't even know what we're trading. I feel like we're trading coins that don't really exist and at the same time don't really hold any value because if I can't walk to Starbucks and use my cryptocurrency today as it is, then it's really not worth anything. It's all based on speculation.
Right.
Speculation is a dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
Speculation is like a tulip, which is what they call the cryptocurrency. Is it goes all the way up and back down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for something to go down $500 in an hour is actually pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And that's what happened today.
Yeah.
So if my money, let's say I had like a couple hundred thousand dollars, I can't lose that type of percentage in an hour.
Yeah.
Sometimes in real investments, that takes decades. You know what I mean? Like, that's the type of stuff we're dealing with here. So if it goes down $500 and I enter the market, then maybe I'm actually better off because then there's room for growth.
Uh-huh.
But it's we don't know. There's just too many unknowns.
Right.
I think it will work out in the end because there is a technology aspect to chain technology that has a benefit.
Yeah.
We just haven't explored it enough yet to actually to benefit off of it and have more stability.
Right. Your purpose is to be that person to pave the way for your family to come of all the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you start off by saying because your parents made a sacrifice to come here.
Yes.
To give you the opportunity they never had.
Exactly.
So tell me about that.
So, like I was telling you, I went back home. Until the moment I went back home, as an adult, I did not understand my purpose. I did not understand why, not to say why I was here, but like why they were so hard on me.
Yes.
And why they said, like, you don't understand, like, the opportunity you have is so vast and so great. Take advantage of it. When I went back home as an adult in my 20s and I seen where they came from, I knew right then and there my purpose was far greater than I even anticipated.
Why? What made you?
I seen poverty on levels that I don't think I can really articulate in words. Like, things that I take for granted, first world problems. First world problems that actually became like a visual to me. It wasn't just like a word, thoughts or whatever people just say. Like, it became real. Like, they literally came from a place that's not on my map. Like, you cannot find this place on the map. So when I got back home, I was journaling while I was there, and I was trying to put myself in the mindset, like, when I come back, I remember just before I left, I got in a car, not in a car accident, but my car got hit, and I got a lump sum, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to buy something nice. When I came back, I bought myself a Honda Civic, and I said, I'm going to grind the shit out of this car, because this is bigger than me. Yeah. And then that was before I met my partner also. And then I started going to this path where I started working two jobs. I started finding any way to get myself as much income as possible, because I wanted to fast track my life. I wanted to get to my goals faster. I wanted to prove to my parents that they came here with nothing, and that what's going to manifest is the fact that I'm going to change our generation forever.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be able to take all the resources that they couldn't tap into based on the fact of lack of education, lack of just being here long enough. Like, my family's technically only been here for 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years. So in 30 years, what did they accomplish? Are they able to buy a home? Are they able to do these fundamental things that are actually pretty normal if you've been here long enough, yeah, right? So what do I need to do? I need to generate something like a business or some type of model that I can pass. Something financially that I can give to someone else in my family that is from my lineage that can take it and run with it. So once I realized that, every day waking up was easy.
Right.
Waking up at 5 a.m. is not hard when you know what you need to do, because you already know where you're going.
Yeah.
Like, I see my parents work hard, really, really hard. My mom's worked at the same company for 30 years. That doesn't happen anymore. I've seen her work on the factory floor. I need to do better. When I think about that, that willpower battery I talk about just charges up like quickly. Like, it's like it was never empty.
How do you reflect on now, knowing what you know? How do you reflect on the sacrifices that your parents have made?
I feel like it's stuff that I don't even know if I could do to that level or depth. Like, they came from nothing. Nothing. And when my dad came here, my mom came afterwards, obviously, we sponsored her, but when my dad came here, he didn't know how to speak English. The fundamental things to even get us a job were very difficult, you know? So I was born here, I was bred here, I had all the tools and accessories, everything is given to me, potentially.
Right.
I have no excuse not to wake up early in the morning to get to my goals. And the way I look at it, it's a habit. If I just wake up earlier than everybody else, eventually I'm going to be ahead of you. Like the marathon, like Amazing Race, you know how they have the staggered starts? Like,
yeah.
If I'm always the first one to leave, I'm always going to get there before you.
Yeah.
It might take me longer sometimes. I might trip up and you might get there before me. But in the end, in the grand scheme of things, I'm going to win this race.
Yeah. Knowing everything that you know now, what advice would you have given to your younger self?
If I'm Jeffrey at 18 years old, just finishing high school, and all the information I know now, what would I say to myself? Or what advice would I give myself?
Yeah.
I'd say, try to put yourself in a position of growth. So whatever industry you decide to go into, whatever avenue from a financial perspective that you wanted to explore, start investing now. Don't think $20 is not a lot of money to invest, because when it comes to investing, when you have time, there's almost no goal or no feat that you cannot reach. So I would tell myself, start saving earlier, saving and investing earlier, and exploring business options that now have turned out to be $1 million investments. Right? That's what I would tell myself. Just try to put yourself in a position that to use your time more wisely. Surround yourself with more people that want to use your talents for growth, and not put yourself in a position where you're wasting time. Because time is more valuable than we ever, ever, ever even imagined. Because we can't get it back.
Some good advice.
Yeah.
Some good advice. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, because you are starting this brokerage, specifically focusing on wheat stocks, or if they want to get investment advice, because you are an investor, you also have coaching business on the side, and you help people sort of achieve their dreams.
Yeah.
What's the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
So if someone wants to reach out to me, I have a couple mediums that I use. So CFH Development is the group and the business I started, and the coaching and the financial services I provide. If you want to reach me, my number is 416-873-0170.
You're old school. You like the phone calls.
I like talking. email works too at jeffreyasirifi@gmail.com. LinkedIn, Jeffrey Asirifi. You can reach me there. And if they want to, I think, I don't have an IG page yet, but I've just been working on those three mediums right now, and eventually I'll expand. And if you want to reach out to my amazing interviewer, she can connect you also.
Yeah, totally.
It's been an amazing chat, and that was my first one, so I'm really excited about it. It's really good.
Well, and I want to thank you so much for sharing all of your secrets. I know that you make it your personal mission to share as much knowledge with people. I think you're authentic and genuine in that way. I think you don't promise things. You really are working with the person's strength, and I really appreciate and respect that about you. So thank you for taking time to do this.
Amazing.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.